Turn in your Bibles with me to 1 Samuel chapter 29, and we're going to go through that chapter into chapter 30, and then also look at the first chapter of 2 Samuel. As I said earlier, this will be the last before I take a break, and then Dr. Aaron will be preaching the next two Sundays. And after that, through December, I'll bring a series on the true message or meaning of Christmas. I won't tire of reminding you that as we go through the historical narrative of this portion of the Old Testament, we need to remember right through our study of the Bible, God is a God of purpose. It's not just a plan, but it's a purpose. And a purpose speaks a little bit more than a plan. A purpose has direction, has movement, and an end in mind. And there's a whole process that you have to go through to fulfill that purpose. And purpose needs to be fulfilled. God has a purpose. God is a purposeful God. And even when He saves you, He saves you not with a plan, but purposefully. And each one who is saved by His elect purpose simply fits into His big purpose to fulfill God's purpose. God chose Israel. And Israel came from the loins of Jacob, who came from Isaac, who came from Abraham. God made a covenant with Abraham in chapter 12 of Genesis. In you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. But Israel failed to keep within that purpose and prided in itself in being the specially chosen people of God. We too can boast in our election and our salvation and forget that there is a purpose for which God saved us, to fit His purpose, not a purpose for my life so that I might be glorified, but a purpose for His glory, His purpose. My salvation is not for me. My salvation is for God. He forgives me, not just to forgive me and make me feel forgiven and happy about being forgiven, but so that He and His name is glorified. This section brings us to the close of Saul's life, King Saul. But with him, because he lived under a curse from God. And let us not be afraid of admitting that God put a curse. And you can live a cursed life when you fail the purposes of God and throw opportunities aside and go your own way. So Saul was under a curse, and with him died his innocent son, Jonathan. So this records for us the death of Saul and Jonathan. But there's a lot of information and context to that passing away of Saul and Jonathan. In chapter 29, we have the continuation of David's episode with Achish, and remember last week we looked at how David had trusted the Lord one moment, and then because like us he was inconsistent in his spiritual walk, the next moment he speculated. When I was leading an interactive study in the church in Goa, one of the ladies caught that word and she said, speculation. It's so dangerous. And you remember that first verse. Verse 1 of chapter 27. David said in his own heart, I'm going to die anyways under Saul. So let me make my own plans and go to the enemies of the God, of the people of God. And he went to the Philistines and hid himself with Achish and made an alliance. And that too a fake one. He kept bluffing the king of the Philistines, Achish. And so it's a continuation of what's happening here. And it's about a war that the Philistines gather. In the first five verses, somehow in my notes I missed putting the first five verses of chapter 29. But you look at it, in the first five verses of chapter 29, the Philistines gather all their forces at Aphek, and the Israelites are by the spring in Jezreel, and the lords of the Philistines, verse 2, were passing on by hundreds and thousands. They're just, trooping by in a march onwards to battle Israel. And David is part of this Philistine army going to battle against the people of God. Achish's commanders discern David's loyalties are not true in the first few verses of this chapter 29. And they go to Achish, the commanders of the Philistines, they go to Achish and they say, we really know this man. He is really loyal to Saul, the king of Israel. He works for him. Achish is saying that. Not the commanders. Achish is saying it to his commanders. David is really Saul's man. But now, look at it. For days and years. Days and years. He's with me. He deserted. Can you believe that? David is a deserter. You know what is done to deserters in the army? If they're caught, they're in big trouble. They can be court-martialed, they can be executed. He's a deserter to me. And I find him faultless. I can trust him. But the commanders are angry and they say, no, send the man back. You know why? If you read those verses 4 and 5, they're saying, you know what is liable to happen is David needs to get reconciled to Saul, his master. What better way than take advantage of this battle and desert us now and kill us and take our heads to Saul and say, look, take me back. So send him back. Remember the song that they sang, David. While Saul struck his thousands, he struck tens of thousands. And so Achish sends David back from battle. That's verses 6 to 10. Achish calls David, and his words speak of how much trust he had in David. I want you. It is right that you should march out with me in the campaign. I found nothing wrong with you, in you, from the day you came to me. But my lords don't approve of you. You got that in verse 6? Go back, go peacefully, so that my commanders are not upset. But David debates with Achish. What have I done? Since the time I entered your service till now. And that's a bluff, right? Because he has been killing the Philistines, everybody, so that they can't come and squeal on him. He's been very cunning, protecting himself in enemy camp. And Achish believes his bluff. He says, yeah, I know you are as blameless as an angel of God. And David's not even blushing. When light comes, please go. I love you very much, but I can't have you. And verse 11. David turns back from the battle. Says, David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, but the Philistines went up to Jezreel. And you read that and you don't think much about it, except you have to understand God has a purpose, right? What God did here, unwritten, missed by superficial reading, is God saves David big time, doesn't he? God has a purpose for David. He's anointed him king. David is not going to die, but David is also going to be salvaged out of his own cunning plan. He made the plan in chapter 27. He's caught in a trap now because he can't do what he was doing before, fighting and killing the Philistines and coming and telling lies to Achish that I've actually killed the Israelites. And I'm so blameless. I'm like an angel of God. You know, Achish says, what an angel I have in David. If only he knew. But now in this battle, I mean, how is he going to play his cards? It's an impossible situation, and God saves him by making those Philistine lords turn against him and tell their king, Achish, to send David back. And so David goes back, and he doesn't have to participate in this Philistine war on the Philistine side against his own people. Are you seeing that? I mean, big mistake, chapter 27. You should not have speculated, David. Speculation, you know. And remember, I used the Marathi word watla. And she's here. She keeps telling everybody, don't use that word. Because speculation is always dangerous. God saves him from his own folly. And that brings us hope, right? Do you make mistakes in your life? You may be sitting there sometimes feeling, yeah, I'm not perfect. I'm not strong enough. I made a mistake. I mean, if your heart is with God and you appeal to God and you stay with God, God can save you out of the most tricky situation you have put yourself in. You deserve to be in trouble. God saves you from trouble. So when Aaron stands here and sings out of the depths and attributes Psalm 130, possibly to King David, it's possible, you know, out of the depths. I mean, I have got into a hole, Lord. I cried and you delivered me. You can do that, you know. You really can. we see a very good side and a wise side of David in the next chapter, 31 verses. Very quickly as we go through this, and remember, we are not expounding the historical narrative. As we go through the series in detail, we look at it paragraph by paragraph. What do we see? The first 6 verses, David is in deep distress, not of his own making, but as a consequence of his folly that started in chapter 27. It goes back to Ziklag, the third day. Remember, in those days, distances were covered on horseback or walking. So it took 3 days to return from the battlefield, to go back to Ziklag, where in the Philistine country he was running away from Saul, the king. The Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag, and they had destroyed and burned Ziklag with fire and taken all the women, including David's wives. And David and his men come and find it. That's in the first 3 verses. Burned, and all their women taken captive. The women had not been killed, but they're going to be in big trouble, because in this kind of raid and battle, the military usually ravish the women, rape them, kill them, devastate women. And when David, verse 4, and the people came and saw this, they really bitterly, bitterly mourned. In great distress, they wept until they had no more strength to weep, says that verse. I like verses like this because it gives me discernment and wisdom to know that sometimes sorrow is so deep and it's okay for you to yell out your sorrow. And it's indiscreet for pastors and elders and fellow believers to come and say, no, don't cry, don't cry. I don't know why Christians think we should not cry when we are hurt. I mean, if you're hurt, you're hurt, right? When you are bitter of soul, you're bitter of soul. When you are broken, you're broken. When you are suffering loss, you have suffered loss. Don't be a schizophrenic believer and think, I must suppress this. You are allowed to cry. You're allowed to cry like this. And in my history, my personal history, I've cried like this several times. Even as a young man, a teenager, my mother held me close and comforted me as I yelled out, sobbing. And she just held me, and I knew she understood. And she didn't tell me, don't cry. She said, what to do, what to do. There's nothing we can do. I'm sorry. And it was not her fault. Believers can cry. Christians can cry. You can be devastated. It's acceptable. God understands. And we should understand each other. But we shouldn't get drowned in sorrow and bogged down so that we become immobile and unable to do anything. You know, at such times like this, we need at least one person to be able to think straight. Because in deep sorrow, you don't think straight. God be thanked for His grace that provides a minority of people who can think straight, even in deep sorrow. Look at verse 6. David was greatly distressed because beyond the weeping and the bitterness, they wanted to stone him to death. Did you realize that? Have you read that verse? They wanted to stone him because they were bitter in soul. So the leader gets the blame. Each for his sons and daughters. I mean, that's what leadership is about. And if you're not willing to take the stoning, then ask God to give you strength to take it. You know, I'm not telling you to quit. If you're a leader and people want to stone you because they've lost everything and they're so bitter, they may not even say you're at fault, but they say whatever they want to say. They were bitter in soul. They were going to stone David. That's it. And there's nobody to go to. There is somebody to go to. Look at that verse. But David strengthened himself in the Lord, his God. That's the out. Not the cop out. That's the out. Do you know the Lord enough that everybody is ready to hurt you, stone you, maybe kill you? And you can hold on to the Lord. It's okay. Underline that verse. Never forget it. And don't take it out of context. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God when everybody was against him. And don't only think about the stoning. Think of the reason for the stoning. What motivated them to want to do that against their leader? It's the bitterness of soul. Do you know your followership can become bitter? Those who follow you can become bitter. And this can happen again and again. Life is not easy. And leaders must be made of this ability to know the Lord and walk with Him. Even though David had made a mistake in chapter 27. You see how quick he is to return back to the right place of refuge. He's not perfect. He's not a perfect leader. He speculated and made a big mistake. But when push comes to shove, when push comes to shove, what happens? These distractions should be minimized. When push comes to shove, David is able to go to the Lord his God and be strengthened. David is dependent on God. Verse 7 to 10. Look at it. Chapter 30 of 1 Samuel. David said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod. This was brought, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I go after the band that did this? And the Lord answered what? Go and you will rescue the people, the women. Do you see that? He strengthened himself in the Lord and prayed, got the answer, and went. He's back on track. He had lost it in a couple of chapters. He's back on track very quick. David is led to the Philistines in verses 11 to 15. They found an Egyptian. And this Egyptian is given food and water to drink. And his spirit is revived even with those figs that he's been given to eat and raisins. Insight into what you need to feed yourself when you're weary, huh? Figs and raisins. See what happens. His eyes light up. His spirit is revived. And so David inquires of him, and he tells him, I am an Egyptian, a young man of Egypt, an Egyptian servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me behind because I fell sick 3 days ago. And then there was this raid, and he tells him the whole thing. How Ziklag was burned with fire. And so David says in verse 15, will you take me down to this band? And he said, swear to me by God that you won't kill me. I'll take you down. So he's led. And you might think he's led by the Egyptian. See, God is the one he inquired. God is the one who assured him of victory. God is the one who leads him to the Egyptian. You see how things fall in place as you walk with God. From verses 11 to 15, that's what we see. And then 16 to 20, David routs the Philistines. They were drinking and eating and dancing because they had great spoil. That's what the armies do when they have victory. They get drunk and they party. And maybe they're bringing out the women to ravish them. They're out of their minds. They're not thinking clearly. And David comes. And verse 17 says, he struck them down from twilight till evening of the next day. It's a long slaughter. Not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who in their very, very bad state jumped onto camels and ran away. And David was able to get back everything, everything. And you see at the end of verse 20, when this begins to help us see David's clear thinking and character, they said, this is David's spoil. This now is David's possession. He won it. But remember what had happened earlier. 200 men had got tired out. And they had decided not to join the battle but to rest. And verse 21 refers back to them. And from verse 21 to 25, David demonstrates fair sharing. They were too exhausted to follow David. They had been left by the brook of Besor. And they came and met David. And David greeted them. And you look at verse 22, it says, then all the wicked and worthless fellows among the men who had gone with David said. The Bible doesn't hide the fact that David's band was made up of these kind of people. Look at it. All the wicked and worthless fellows. Whom is David discipling? Whom is David training? Whom is David using? Whom is David, gradually getting into the kingdom? wicked and worthless fellows, a bunch of goons, the gunda types, the bad guys, the people who are hopeless and hopelessly bad from a human perspective. And they say, no, these 200 people, they didn't come with us, you know, we did all the work and they just were lazy. No, no, they don't get any share. But David said, verse 23, you shall not do so, my brothers, with what the Lord has given us. He has preserved us, given into our hand the band that came with us, against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who goes down into the battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. I like that. They were not really doing nothing. What were they doing? They were looking after our bags. You know, even in the Lord's work, and even in a situation like we are facing as DCC, you know, some of us make the food, go visit, spend hours, spend moments. I hope those who don't are not doing nothing. They're praying. You know, some can be involved actively and practically. Others can be also involved actively in the secret place of prayer. And we should recognize that this principle is what we should practice. What is it? For as his share, look at verse 24, for as his share is who goes down into the battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. They shall share alike. When I started the Love Maharashtra office, I told my staff, you know, I don't mind sticking stamps, cutting the papers, addresses, labeling, you know, getting all sticky with the gum, running to the post office. I don't mind doing that. If you are willing to do the preaching and the teaching and the studying, what is more important? You might think what I'm doing is important, but I can't do what I'm doing if you don't faithfully do what you're doing, right? The ones behind the scenes, the ones doing the humble task, which no one notices, are as important as the one who gets the public focus. And we should share alike. Fair share. But something else happens in verse 26 and following. David even shares the spoils with the elders of Judah. Sent part of the spoils to his friends, the elders of Judah. Here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. It was for those in Bethel and Ramoth and of the Negeb and Jatir and all the rest of the places. For all the places where David and his men had roamed. See, they had all helped him in some way or the other. He never forgets his friends. He never forgets his friends. I mean, everyone has a share. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, you were not even involved, but, you know, 5 years ago when I needed help, you were there for me. 10 years ago when you were there, you know, now I've got it, I share with you. Don't build your own kingdom. Don't spread your own glory. Remember everybody who's part of your ministry. And so we get into chapter 31 and into chapter 1 of 2 Samuel. And you have to take these two chapters together, because in chapter 31, Saul and his sons are killed. You look at verses 1 to 6, and what do you see here? The Philistines were fighting against Israel. And the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gibeah. And the Philistines overtook Saul and his son, and the Philistines struck down Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, the sons of Saul. The battle pressed hard against Saul, and the archers found him, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword, thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and mistreat me." Eventually they did cut his head off and shame him, but his armor bearer would not, for he feared greatly. Therefore Saul took his own sword and committed suicide. And this is an acceptable norm in the battlefield, for the leader to kill himself before he's caught and shamed by the enemies. Thus Saul died, his three sons, his armor bearer, because his armor bearer also committed suicide. And everyone flees because they see this. And the next day when the Philistines came, found Saul dead. They desecrate his body. But the people of Israel come and find him and take him and bury him. See all that right up to verse 13, 7 to 13. They cut off his head in verse 9. They parade it throughout the land of the Philistines. The idols are glorified. The Philistines are glorying in this. And they put his armor, verse 10, in the temple of Ashtoreth, an idol. They fastened his body to the wall of Bethshan. They're really giving glory to their gods. The God of Israel is being shamed because of this man who had gone so far from the purposes of God. The people of Jabesh Gilead heard what they had done, what the Philistines had done to Saul, and they have valiant men who went all night and took the body. They had to do this in the dark of night, because if the Philistines caught them, they would be dead. And they fasted 7 days. That's the end of Saul and John. Turn to 2 Samuel. Death of Saul is mentioned again. David returned from striking down the Amalekites. He remained 2 days in Ziklag. And what's happening? David, in the first 12 verses of chapter 1, again shows his character. His enemy is dead. And you know what he does? He genuinely mourns for this man, because this man has been God's anointed king. Bad man. But I feel terribly, terribly sad. Isn't it sad when a man anointed by God goes so bad and he dies without repenting? We don't know all the reasons for which David mourned, but he says some things later. But here it says a man, the first 12 verses, a man comes from the Amalekites. And if you read this, it's a silly story, because this man, he thinks if he announces the death of Saul and then takes credit for it, he'll get some bakshish from David. But David kills him, gets him executed. Look at what he says to this man in verse 16, verse 14. How is it, verse 14, how is it that you were not afraid to put out your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? And David called one of the young men and said, go execute him. And he struck him down so that he died. Verse 12, they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. Verses 17 to 27, the lament, the psalm of sorrow that David penned for Saul and Jonathan. Let's read it. You in your minds and I read it out loud and pick up some things. David's lament for Saul and Jonathan. Your glory, verse 19, O Israel, is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. When leadership dies, the nation has lost its glory. Because leadership is the face of the nation. Tell it not in Gath. Gath is the Philistine country. Let it not be heard in enemy territory. Publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised exult. How sad it is that the Philistines paraded his head all over the place and they were happy. Why give the devil, why give the enemies of God a chance to rejoice over the people of God and their defeat? Verse 21, you mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew or rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil. Let us have a drought, because this is tragic that Saul's shield fell there. Verse 22, from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan, beloved and lovely, in life and in death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. You daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you luxuriously in scarlet and who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. He speaks so positively of his enemy. And he says, how the mighty have fallen in the midst of battle. Jonathan lies slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You, very pleasant have you been to me. Your love to me was extraordinary, surpassing the love of women. I could preach a whole sermon on David and Jonathan. I had a deep friend who would sign his letters, Jonathan, and address me as David. Roland Oskarson from Sweden. We worked together. We were such kindred spirits. We even had the same blood group, same, almost same birthday, same month, just a week apart. Same age, same vision, same commitment. I would speak, he would write. And we were able to join hands and hearts and begin Love Maharashtra. Your love for me surpasses the love of women. To have a comrade, a brother, a sister, like that is to be coveted. It's rare. How the mighty have fallen and the weapons of war perished. But go back to that David and Jonathan. And someone wrote in a hymn, Jesus, his friend and brother. And in the book of Proverbs says, there is one who sticks closer than a brother. The Lord Jesus himself. Do you know him? Our Father, we thank you so much for your word, strengthening us, giving us great inspiration, wisdom, insight into your ways. And we thank you for David, who fell short so many times, but always ran back to you. Make us like that, Lord. And then give us Jonathan's comrades, a brother or a sister who's closer to us than anybody else can be. And we thank you for Jesus, who is closer to us than anyone else can ever be. We worship him. Amen.